upside down. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program.
You
it's 503-733. I'm just playing on a comment you made earlier. 503-733-2297. I'm glad that we figured out that sub stood for suburban perspective, though, because I was starting to think that you were right, and I was pouring out my unconscious onto the page by accident. All right.
I'm really looking forward to Monday when you see your shrink.
I should have a contest to let people attend. Win a ringside seat at Rick's therapy session Monday.
Rick, some things you've just got to do for you. Doesn't always have to be about the show, Rick.
Thank you. Well, there you go. You've just saved me $85. It's just a show. Go home. Quit being a dick. And leave your check. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, should we have Scotty come in and sing a theme for Lisa as well?
Absolutely.
I think we shall, Scotty J.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
Scotty J, hello, sir. How are you?
Doing great.
How you doing?
And no.
Okay, so you sang a theme song for Brian Blank earlier.
Right, because he didn't have one.
You know what? That's no excuse.
Alicia's is... I can't find hers.
Are you saying that it's gone? It was here this morning. Now it's gone. Are you saying that Brian Blank is more important than Lisa Goddard?
Oh,
no, what
so
I'm saying
rude.
Is Brian Blank.
I can't believe that you would say that about Lisa. I cannot
on hold?
Diminish her importance.
I would never say that about Lisa. Brian Blank did not have a sounder, right?
All right, so here's... You may sing one of the following things. You may either sing the theme song to Barney Miller, or you may sing Yo-Ho-Ho in a bottle of rum.
Yo-Ho-Ho-Ho, a pirate's life for me.
I hope I scrape some chalkboards out there, Jeff. Sorry.
This is working out less well than I thought it would. Let's just do the other thing. Let's welcome now, thank you, from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard! Hello.
Oh.
How are you?
Hey, I'm good. What did Brian Blank's theme song sound like?
Brian Blank's theme song was, I believe, the theme from Bonanza as sung badly by Scotty J.
Oh, excellent.
And the best part, and by best I mean most horrifying, is that Scotty, he was singing the Bonanza theme, and then along the way, he was adding his own gunfire sound effects. Sort of, like Hoss had to go round up some stray cattle or something. He was making gunfire sound effects, and I swear to God, as he was doing it, he was pointing his fingers at me gun style as though he were a particularly precocious 5-year-old.
Oh, yes.
So there you go.
And that's it. Can I put in a request for him to work on then?
Yeah, absolutely, you may. Yeah.
The theme to the Rockford Files.
There you go. Scotty J, do you know the theme to the Rockford Files? Answer me now, and if you lie, I'll know. You do? All right. Then sadly, Scotty, I'm going to have to...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
Why, it's Scotty J. Hello, sir.
Nope, I didn't get to finish writing on the screen fast enough before you pulled the trigger on that.
What were you?
Was going to say, I have the Rockford Files,
okay, so
probably
could,
in my
so you
database.
So you'll be able to learn it.
All right, well, that's all right.
All right, okay. Here you go. So learn the Rockford Files for Monday, please.
Excellent. Okay, excellent.
Thank you, Scotty. All right, there you go. Scotty J, ladies and gentlemen. All right, how's life on the Hill, sister? What's up with you?
Hey, not so bad. Things are clearing. It's been a crazy morning and week. It's been a little high on the stress factor.
You know, there was something I was going to ask you, and I can't for that. My brain is just falling apart into some sort of gelatinous mush. I have no idea what's going on in my head lately. There was something I was going to ask you. And it occurred to us in the first hour of the program, and I'm not putting the blame on anybody but myself. I should have written it down because I should have known that I wouldn't remember it.
I don't know.
That I had written down, or I had made an observation out loud. I said, hey, we got to ask Lisa Goddard about that. And then it just frittered away into the air. I have nothing. It was something that was not really in the news, but it was something that was sort of the news.
Congressional haircuts?
No, but Rick Emerson's willing to hear about those as well. And see, here's
the
thing.
There's some bad ones. Yeah, I don't know.
The thing about it is I would just ask the audience, because the audience, they are sort of like an instant recall device for me. The audience is, they're sort of the court stenographer for the Rick Emerson show. And I would ask the audience to call in and tell me what it is that I was saying out loud you ought to weigh in on, except the phone lines are all busy from people calling up, guessing what celebrity Scotty J has compared himself to in a physical sense.
Ooh.
Have you ever seen a picture of Scotty J?
No, but I've had his haircut described to me. That's all I got. But you've been very white man. It's basically how you describe it.
He's the whitest of men. He's, all right. So, well, let's take one call and see what someone has to say. So, Lisa, stay right there. Jesse, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with myself and the lovely Lisa Goddard. How are you today, sir?
I'm not bad, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Now,
and Lisa, how are you?
Hey, I'm all right.
Are you able to guess what celebrity Scotty believes himself to look like?
Yes, but so this isn't my guess, but what I think Scotty J looks like is the from the Muppets, was it Hawkins, the eagle, the big blue eagle
Oh,
thing?
Totally. Well, it wasn't Hawkins, though. Was his name Hawkins? I know he was...
I can't remember what his name was. It was something like that.
But he was the bald eagle, and he was always sort of distinguished and looked a little constipated.
Yeah, and he was always pissed at everybody.
And he just sort of walked around and talked like this.
Yes.
I suppose that's better than looking like Beaker, because I've heard that, I've heard Scotty referenced as Beaker, which I suppose makes me Bunsen Honeydew. And so it just takes us down this whole path of ping pong ball eyelid badness that I don't even want to think about. So,
that's what I think he looks like, but the question is, who does he think he looks like? I think he's delusional. I bet he would say probably Tom Cruise.
No, it was not Tom Cruise, but that is a good guess. All right, thank you, Jesse.
All right,
there you go.
Didn't you say he's blonde or no?
It's kind of a sort of dirty blonde hair.
He's blonde?
Sort of, yeah, it's kind of a blonde with sort of brownish roots kind of a thing.
Okay, he didn't pull out the River Phoenix on you.
No, I think even his delusion knows. I think it does have boundaries. But the number of people who really have suggested that he should be standing next to me in a laboratory going, me, me, me. Is really, I mean, it's off the charts. So
love to see that.
And that just takes us down to this whole alley of just flannel covered whatever. All right, I got to stop.
What's great is that Scotty has to, but we have to remember, Scotty is screening these calls.
It's true. No,
so anyone that compares him to someone he doesn't like, are they going to get through?
No, Scotty, to be fair, he's very honorable about it. To the best of my knowledge, Scotty doesn't screen out people. You have no idea. Really, one of these days, you're just going to have to come here and sit in on an entire program. You cannot fathom, and I only say this because you see the program through small little slices. The prism that you view the Rick Emerson Show through is necessarily very narrow sometimes. Really, Scotty just plays such a large part in this program. The audience really does. What did he call them? Scotty says that he has a great number of hate fans.
Yes.
People who are simultaneously revulsed by, yet strangely compelled by, Scotty J. And all that is, and all that is his personality. So, all right. Well, we're wrapping up. What is the 100 hours? Is it done? Is it over? It was over a couple days ago, wasn't it?
No, it was over yesterday, supposedly.
And have they actually? I mean, I know that they're going to say that they really got things done and really got things accomplished. But did they, or was this a lot of symbolic and cosmetic legislation that didn't really advance?
I think the biggest thing that will actually come of all this, there are two things that I think are that we know will probably become law. One is that minimum wage increase, moving the minimum wage up to $7.20 from $5.50 an hour. So I hope Scotty's listening. That'll help him. and of course, that could run into that. It's going to have a tougher time in the Senate, but I think ultimately it looks like it might happen, and the president's on board. The other one is a change in how they appropriate security money, 9/11 money.
Right.
That it'll be based on risk, so cities will probably get more money than they were before, and that's significant for a lot of cities. A lot of the other stuff really was the Democrats in the House taking a stand, and that is their job, so you've got to give them some credit for that on things like the lower prescription drug prices in Medicare, stem cell research. Now, there's a chance that this cut in the student loan interest rate, federal student loans. That may actually happen, but it's not clear yet. The big oil stuff, there's an outside chance that could pass the House, all those ends in tax breaks for big oil. It may not be reality because of the White House, but it still is a strong statement, and it still pushes the ball. It puts a lot of pressure on Republicans, and everyone's looking at 08, so it sort of sets the agenda for the next presidential election.
I will say this, that whether they're getting things done or not, the Democrats, there is certainly the perception right now, there is certainly the feeling in the air that they are sort of stirring things up, and they're sort of rattling the cage a little bit, and that's important, because the American people, perception paces reality in this fading republic of ours, and the Americans really do, I think there is a general sense out there that the Democrats are that they're kind of clearing the dust. And so I think that's good. I think that can only benefit them.
Yeah, I think it's tricky. I think that's right. I think there's no doubt they are shaking some dust. They are stirring some things up. But it remains to be seen on what kind of a level. Is this really they're just peeling off the first layer of the onion? Are they really going to cut into things? I have yet to be convinced that this is a permanent shift in Washington culture, like they say it's going to be.
Well, because that never happens. That's never.
That's my question.
That's never the case. I mean, that's the same thing we hear after every disaster, after every tragedy, after every, you know, this is really going to change the way America views, insert, like, social ill that we're really never going to cure here. You know, it's going to be impossible to go back to a pre-insert event era after this, and I really think that this is going to force Americans to take a good long look in the mirror and really ask themselves some tough questions about what kind of country do we want to be, and how are we going to address the issue of social ill that we're never really going to solve, but that we will declare war on, indicating that we'll never solve it right here. So that's it. And I don't mean to sound cynical about it, but I mean, just speaking as a political pragmatist, I think that they're doing the right thing. Oh, somebody has reminded me. Okay, Jay.
Hey.
Listener Jay has reminded me what I wanted to ask
you
about.
Good job, Jay.
My question was to ask you about this, which is, were you there, were you on the Washington beat when Stephen Colbert did the White House press corps dinner?
Yes, I was.
And I don't know whether you were in attendance or not, but you were certainly.
We talked about this, yes.
Did we talk about this? Because I'm pretty sure I was unemployed at the time.
Really? No, I feel like we did talk about it, but we'll see. Okay.
Maybe you're just creating false Rick Emerson memories in your head.
Maybe.
Were you in attendance, and B, if not, what was it like? What was the general tone, and did a firing result from that booking?
I was not there. That was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I'm a congressional correspondent. Although, you know, this is a whole different subject. I am fascinated by the amount of dinners that people get invited to. And honestly, not a single one. I am not plugged in. I am not cool. I'm not hip. Whatever these fancy things are, somehow the invites miss me, which actually is probably fine because it's a little weird, those situations.
See, but I sort of assumed that the door for that thing, you know, even though it is a White House Correspondents' Dinner, I figured that the doors for those sort of things were thrown wide open because they wanted as much coverage as possible from everybody.
I think that they might be. You know, in fact, I was talking to a CNN internet correspondent, Abby Tatton, and she goes to the White House correspondent dinner. So I don't know how it works, but I wasn't there, but I was watching it because I am a geek on TV as it was happening. And my boyfriend, fiance, Sporbert, and I were eating it up. I couldn't believe how fantastic that speech was, and I couldn't believe how awkward and embarrassing the silence was from the press corps afterward. And so I came to work the next day and talked to the people who were there, and I said, what was going on? You know how? And everyone said, it was just so strange. You know, everyone, it was sort of this weird group thing, and actually some people in the press corps who, you know, openly questioned everyone in authority also said to me, we think he went too far.
Oh,
we think, you know, he really was too harsh on the press corps, this kind of thing. And I said, you got to be kidding me. That's his job. That's our job. You know, I thought it was great.
No,
people were really offended. It was really a very strange and fascinating speech. It was great.
See, and that's what I'm saying right there. You and I are really peas in a pot on that, because really the most glorious words to the ears of Rick Emerson are going too far. It's not real comedy until it hurts somebody. That's
right.
That's kind of my belief.
You know, and the press corps deserves it as much as anybody. I mean, it's really true. And, you know, we may do some good. We may report some stories, I hope, that aren't out there. But come on, people. There are times when we are a giant pack and we all follow the one big bouncing ball and we miss the real news on the side, and we need to face up to it.
It was just 2 years, I think, before that. Or now it must have been earlier than that, but it was when Imus was the guy who did it.
Oh, see, that one I didn't see.
Oh, man. I remember, and I was on a station at the time that was an Imus affiliate, and he was the lead-in program to mine at that point. And I remember they invited Imus there during the Clinton administration. And, I mean, Imus who gets up there, and a guy who apparently, you know, he says, and I believe him, is clean and sober at this point, but has just consumed so much alcohol. and done so many drugs in his life that, not unlike Keith Richards or Ozzy Osbourne, he just has this sort of cumulative drunkenness that is never going to go away at this point. And so he's up there slurring his words like some sort of Tom Brokaw in drag, which is kind of what he looks like. And the great thing about Imus's wit doesn't really exist as such. It just comes out as blunt force.
Right, right.
So it's, you know, so he'll, you know, I'm up here talking about this, this pig of a president that we have, you know, or whatever it is. He said words very similar to that, and it really was just like being, kicked in the funny bone. Not being tickled in the funny bone, sort of having somebody hit your funny bone repeatedly with something heavy. So, but do you know who they have this year instead of because of the Colbert flap?
I don't know who it is. I should find out.
Oh, I know. Rick Emerson knows.
Oh, Rick Emerson, please tell us. Please to tell us.
Now, last year they had Stephen Colbert, who is young, he's hip, he's now, he's fresh, he's cutting edge, he's
right.
A little dangerous.
A little angry, he's great.
Yeah, a little angry. In terms of political humor, and by the way, we took a moment yesterday to mourn the passing of Art Buchwald, who we will all miss.
Right, yes.
In terms of political humor, who is the safest, most predictable choice you could possibly come up with, especially given the fact that the president's base is somewhere between 65 years old and dead?
Wow.
It'll be obvious when I say it. When I say it...
When you say it, I'll be right there?
You'll be right there, and then you'll say, I didn't know...
Who's the guy with the piano, Mark?
It's not Mark Russell, but
okay.
That is... But no. But you get so many bonus points with me for even knowing who Mark Russell is and for making that guess.
I'm sad I couldn't come up with the last name. It was almost there.
Mark Russell. I'm kind of a Mark Russell fan, actually, but...
Yeah, I think I am, too. But I would say he's a little more safe.
But you're close. You're close there.
All right, I give up then.
It's going to be, and again, your second reaction is going to be, I thought he was dead. Rich Little.
Oh, no, you're kidding me.
No.
No, really?
It's fantastic.
No, they're not really having Rich Little come.
Rich Little, I mean, seriously. It's,
no,
and I think,
really?
And I think everybody's going to have to show up in, like, Ray-Bans and Izod shirts, and they're all going to have to drive a Ford Taurus to get there.
I mean,
there.
No offense to Rich Little, but you got, come on, are you kidding
me?
I
am not making it up. I
don't
swear
believe it. Wow, now I feel a lot better about not being invited to this stuff.
Seriously, Rich Little, I mean, I don't even know... I mean, it's like they're all going to gather around the television and watch, like, Little House on the Prairie runs. I mean, it's like a whole different era. It is suddenly just being thrust into this one.
That is incredible, right? And now here it is on the Internet. Yeah, playing it safe on the Huffington Post, yeah.
I'm telling you. I mean, and again, God love him. He made a career out of literally doing nothing original. I mean, really, absolutely, by definition, made a career out of being completely and totally not himself. But I mean, it's like you couldn't get further away from Stephen Colbert. I mean, if you were on the moon, it's
no, I don't think so. That's a real wow.
So there you go. So see, there you go.
I am definitely disappointed in that.
Got a little bit of a tip today from Rick.
What
Emerson.
Are we going back to, like, the early 50s? What's happening?
That's
here?
What I'm see. It doesn't it feel like that? I mean, it really.
It really does. Yikes! I better get home and cook dinner.
Yeah,
for my man.
Totally, and quit giving such lip.
Great, that's right. Exactly, it's true.
Don't you go learning to read. All right, anything else before we head into the weekend? Anything else that we need to...
No, you know, I want to ask you, just getting the housekeeping here. Did I ever tell you about, speaking of my own critiques of journalists, of the whole process that we go through in the Senate gallery here for electing our grand poobah press people?
No, I don't even know what that means.
Oh, it's hilarious. Well, it's interesting. The Senate gallery is just the press, and it's run by the press, and we have a staff, and we have an executive committee, and it is important because we sort of duke it out with the Senate over access rights and all this kind of stuff that
right.
is actually very important. But to elect that executive committee, it's fascinating. There's not often heated competition, but sometimes there is. Whether there is or not, the way they do it is everyone who's running literally brings in baked goods, and it's very sort of old school fifth grade.
That's fantastic.
They really are sort of trying to get your vote with some baked goods.
Do they give out little stickers as well too?
Yeah, they put their little. Sometimes they'll put their card. Sometimes every one time I saw a photo.
Is that followed by an admonishment from an authority figure in a cardigan sweater that this isn't a popularity contest?
Yes,
people?
That's exactly right. And that's the funny thing about it. To me, I think it's kind of fun. It's kind of social. People, and I'm all about the free food. I'm not going to lie. You know, I'm not going to vote for someone because they gave me a cupcake. You know, and matter of fact, I think all these people would do fine. I don't think it's a big deal. But there are some people here in the gallery that take it seriously on both sides. Some people who really are fighting for the cupcakes, and some people who are like, down with the cupcakes. We can't. It's embarrassing. It undermines our respectability as the press. And I was like, as opposed to the many stains on our shirts because we're poor. That we show up with, the press, there's all kinds of issues with the dignity and the press, and sometimes we do well, sometimes we don't. But the cupcake issue seems to be where people are drawing their line here in the U.S. Capitol Senate Radio TV Gallery.
By the way, I think from now on, your official positioning statement of the Rick Emerson Show is going to be fighting for the cupcakes. Lisa Goddard. And I'm going to have our big voice guy say that with an absolutely serious inflection in his voice.
That's outstanding.
All right. Enjoy your weekend. We will speak to you very soon. Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Thank you, sister. It's always a pleasure.
See you guys.
All right. There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, from CNN. Fantastic. Hey, it's 1:30.
That was a long call. You should pick up some of these people. They've been very patient.
Yeah. Yes, they have. All right. It's 503-733-2970. We still haven't talked about Cher or my sweater. That Cher voice is now just becoming unintelligible. Sam the Eagle, by the way, is who he is on The Muppet Show. Sam the Eagle. I'm just going to go through these in no particular order, except I'm going to start with the guy who wants to talk about Elizabeth Smart. Dan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, hi, Rick. Hey. I've got you on speakerphone. Is that okay with you? Does that hurt?
Why am I on speakerphone?
Because I'm working, and my tasks are such that I cannot stop.
I
must keep my hands moving at all times.
What is the nature of your job, sir?
I'm a brain surgeon.
Okay, don't be smart.
I'm sorry. I am a lowly blue-collar lackey.
No, that's fine. I was just curious about it.
I'm painting in a garage, and...
Absolutely fine.
I'm just keeping it moving and trying to amuse myself at the same time.
No, because in my head, the only way to ask is in my head, I was making a short list of tasks at which you couldn't stop moving your hands, and then they immediately became pornographic, and that's why I had to do.
Hey, I was there. I'm sure I was there before you.
It's true. All right, what do you got, sir?
Hey, well, I have some. Since we started talking about Elizabeth Smart, God love her. I'm sure he does. Hey, I was in Salt Lake City 2 summers ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was painting houses with a group of good Mormon lads,
mm-hmm.
who actually went to high school with Elizabeth Smart.
Really?
And at that time, I was reading the book you were talking about, Under the Banner
Under
of Heaven,
the Banner
which is
of
one
Heaven.
Of my favorite books of all time.
A great book.
Awesome book. And so I was asking them questions about it and kind of, actually they referred me to that book. But anyway, they went to high school with Elizabeth Smart, and so I was like, well, when she finally went back to school, what was it like? Because of course she grew up a good Mormon girl. I mean, a good, Mormon
totally.
And a virgin, going to get married in the temple and the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Of course, that may not be possible now. And they said, they greeted her like she became a deity. They worshipped the ground she walked on, and she was already a popular girl. Her family is pretty wealthy, by the way.
Yeah.
I actually painted their house.
Yeah.
It's
Well, and I know that I if I recall correctly, and again, if this is wrong, I apologize, but my recollection of it is that because she was kidnapped, we'll take her version of the events, she was kidnapped, but then either due to brainwashing or whatever, she stayed with this guy, when she wasn't physically restrained for a long time, and she was, how do we put this, her purity was no more, her purity had been removed.
Yes, her purity was left in the woods.
But the bishop
says, under the circumstances, the power of the Lord was, through that method, he was allowed to actually restore.
Yes, no,
purity.
It is true. It was the official statement of the church.
Yes.
That she was still a virgin in the eyes of God, that God restored
correct.
Her virginity. So
correct.
There you go. All right. God bless you, sir.
You as well. Keep it up.
All right. You call us anytime. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. Yeah. It was, yes. Well, I'm just going to leave it at that. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Back after this with Chris. Oh, Chris wants to weigh in on the Oriental Asian debate. And Jeff wants to guess what Scotty looks like. Tim Riley's at the Ministry of Truth. Scott Daly's coming up at the 2 o'clock hour. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Every time you make a scene, you find It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming along. Okay, well, let's... it's one of those days where, like, the show's already done. I only say that because I got like 9 hours of stuff left to do, and we got an hour and 20 minutes. Okay, we got to do these real quickly because we got to the Ministry of Truth. Go to the Ministry of Truth. Chris on the Oriental Asian debate. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up, Chris?
Hey, just a quick little thing. I actually got two things for you.
Yes.
With the Oriental Asian thing, just a quick little way to remember it.
Now, are you, let me ask you this, are you in fact Oriental?
Asian? No.
I didn't ask if you were Asian, sir. Okay, you are not. Are you, okay, so this is, we should just assume the default position is oppressive white man. All right, yes, go ahead. Well, no, I mean, you know, just go ahead.
Oriental is for inanimate objects, and Asian is for animate or living objects. That's what I was taught.
So Pat Morita would be Oriental. A gong is Oriental.
Nowadays,
come
I guess
on.
You could say that, yeah.
See, he's dead.
Exactly.
Fine. All right. So an Oriental rug, an Asian actor.
Correct.
Pat Morita, Oriental. See?
And the second thing I got for you, I'm just
dead.
A little hurt.
Yes?
Is, from what you were saying before.
Uh-huh.
My lips are still chapped, but I learned how to breathe from my nose. And,
what? Wait.
My lips are still chapped, but I did learn how to breathe through my nose.
Why are you saying that?
Well, it's because the guy you went to school with.
Sarah, will you step in for a minute and help me out? I don't understand.
I don't understand.
I'm listening. Now, let's take this again. Why did that phrase come out of your mouth just now?
The story that you were telling us before.
About the guy next to me who was a mouth breather.
Exactly.
Oh, because his name was Chris.
Exactly.
And so you are, so the joke is that you are that guy. Obviously, you're not. And then you're saying your lips are still chapped, but you learn to breathe through your nose.
Yeah, but you just ruined it. It's fine.
I'm sorry. Now I feel like an ass.
You got to keep up with me here. Come on.
Okay, sorry. I'll try to do better next time, sir.
All righty.
Thank you, Chris.
Bye-bye.
I feel... Nah, I don't deserve to live.
You let everyone down.
Dirk, will you kiss me? Here's, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome down to the Rick Emerson. Thank you. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. I don't know anything about anything today. Jim Roop, hello, sir. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
You know, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I really don't. It's been a little bit of a kooky week around the Rick Emerson Ranch. I honestly don't know how I'm doing. I'll know on Tuesday. If you ask me Tuesday morning, I'll be able to give you a more accurate assessment of how things are going in the life of Rick. All right. Well, let's talk about how things are going for smokers of marijuana in California. And the only reason I bring this up is because we always say what happens there happens here 2 years later. And B, Oregon is filled with pot smokers. I mean, filled like you don't even, filled like a thing that's filled with pot smokers. Many of whom claim, I know people, and I won't use any names here. But I have a friend of mine here who just constantly just reeks of pot, always smoking huge, you know, amounts of pot around all the time. And if you ask him about it, out comes the card. Whew. Medical marijuana card. I have asthma, you know? And who even knew that asthma was a thing you could get a medical marijuana prescription for?
You would think you wouldn't with asthma.
I, you know, learn something every day. Doesn't matter to me. I don't care. It's a free country. Do whatever you want. But what is the status of medical marijuana now in L.A.? Is it legal or not, or does anybody even know?
Well, there's a law that it says it's okay if you have a prescription to get processed marijuana at a marijuana clinic.
Yes.
However, there is federal law against the possession, sale, and use of marijuana. And federal law trumps state law. So the DEA raided 11 marijuana clinics a couple of days ago, and there's a big hoopla over it, and a lot of people are very angry about it because they shut those clinics down.
Seriously, I just want to see, you know, I want to see footage of the DEA, like, literally finding, like, a grandmother and just leading her out of the building in handcuffs. Because that's the only thing that is ever going to get our government's priorities in order, is if people turn on their television and they see... And here's the thing, I don't...
See, they raided the clinics. They didn't raid users. They raided the clinics, and so they arrested the people who run the clinics. They confiscated weapons and guns and hundreds of thousands of pounds of marijuana.
Jesus.
So they left the users alone.
The humanity. I'm telling you this right now. Now, because these are, according to the state, legal clinics, but not according to the federal government.
Right.
So, whatever. I like how Republicans are in favor of states' rights until there's something that displeases them. And to be fair, this happened under Bill Clinton as well. I mean, the Clinton administration actually, and I say this because people always accuse me of being one-sided on things, the Clinton administration actually imprisoned more marijuana users than any administration in history. But right now, the Republicans are in the White House, and so they're the ones who get the lumps. This idea that states' rights are important until you do something that the federal government doesn't really think you ought to be allowed to do until you have one too many rights, or you know, you're gay, and then suddenly bam, in you know, states' rights mean nothing. If I was running a marijuana clinic, I would find, and I mean this sincerely, I would find the sweetest, most adorable 90-year-old women that I could possibly find to run it, and I would have my marijuana clinic staffed with nothing but old women. I would make sure that they were really polite and that they baked and that they made chocolate chip cookies for everybody. I would make sure that they had aprons on and that they always smiled and that they wore a shirt that said something like "Jesus loves me." Seriously, because the only way that this insanity is ever going to stop is if the American people turn on television and they see grandmothers being arrested for this. So, and I find it hard to believe that the government can still get away with this because everybody knows somebody who has cancer. Everybody knows somebody that's got some illness that they need this for. It's just insane. It doesn't make any
sense. You have to wonder why they're taking time to do this anyway.
Seriously. You know? I mean, have they cured cancer yet? And if not, why don't they get back to me when that's taken care of? You know what I mean? Aren't we fighting a war somewhere? Yeah. Or several?
The DEA should be down at the border, for heaven's sake.
That's what I'm saying. There's actual crime. There are real problems to be solved. Well, it's just going to make me angry. We should move on. Let me ask you this, and I don't mean to spring this on you, but you saw the story, this thing at this Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts film?
Yeah.
Now, what are we... I have some sound on this. What is it? This is a PA, a production assistant. He's not killed, but he's very seriously injured, right?
Yeah, it's a special effects assistant, and they had some simulated missile. It was really simulated, I guess, if it blew up on him. But south, and he got hurt. But that's really not uncommon. There's a special effects guy who lives across the street from me who he's been in the hospital several times blowing himself up.
Jesus, man.
It happens all the time.
Maybe he's not too good at his job.
No, he's good. I mean, his work is in a lot of movies. I think actually the last movie he's working on, one now, he's preparing a bunch of stuff over across the street, but Ladder 49,
right,
all that,
right.
Fire, he did all that.
Yeah.
But he's always getting hurt. He's got bandages everywhere.
Just wait till he starts filming the Vic Morrow story.
Yeah,
there you go, a little California humor. Uh-oh. I got some sound here. Let's see, this is Downey Fire Captain Darren Moon saying that the FX assistant suffered head and face burns.
The next day, they were going to do the special effects shooting. Something went terribly wrong. The device exploded while the person was holding the device, causing the critical injury.
You know, the thing is, it's almost worth it just because the amount of chicks you must get just being like any kind of a stuntman or a guy who has to like survive fire every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Chicks have got to be all over you for that. So, I mean, once the burns are better, the chicks will be all over you.
Well, it depends on where those burns are.
Yes.
You know.
I got nothing. Big plans for Jim Roop this weekend?
No, none. Zero. Zip.
See, those are the best weekends when you've got nothing planned. Your whole weekend is one big expanse of just.
I have a ball game on Sunday. That's it.
That's it, man. You got days of slack ahead of you.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic.
I'll start drinking in about 15 minutes and stay that way until game time.
Good for you. You are going to see that, you know, that endears you to the Rick Emerson audience more than you could ever know. All right.
Well, it's important to relax on the weekend.
No, absolutely. No, yeah. We don't look down on that at all in the radio program. It's an important part of life. Enjoy your weekend. We will have speaks with you soon, my friend.
All righty. Thank you.
There you go. Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, heading off for the weekend. All right. Tim Riley returns in about 5 seconds for the Ministry of Truth. In the meantime, I swear to God, there's two callers on hold right here, John and Jeff. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
Given that Pat Moriarty's an Oriental.
Well, he's dead, so yes.
Well, I get that, but if you order Asian chicken salad, does it come with maggots?
What?
If you ordered an Asian chicken salad, does it come with maggots?
Why would it come with maggots?
Because it's moving.
Do you want to stick with that joke, or do you want to try to come up with something funnier?
No, I'm good with that.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I needed to know. Thank you. All right, there you go.
I think that this is a bad topic. I don't think you should have people calling about that anymore.
I didn't realize. I had no idea.
Okay.
See, because it's a linguist joke. Because animate
objects...
But it's
not, it's a racial joke.
It's not a racial joke
well,
at all.
Well, some people are taking it, they're misconstruing
well,
it.
Well, that's just that guy. He's clearly a nitwit.
Yeah.
So, it was funny when I was making fun of Pat Morita being dead, though. See, Pat Morita, death humor, that's really the key. That's really that's the golden nexus. The Golden Nexus.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth,
exactly.
This is Tim Riley.
Well, K.D. Kim is... K.D. Kim.
Okay.
Is angrily disputing an account in today's Oregonian that her husband, James, ate berries out of bear excrement. She contacted the newspaper this morning to say that absolutely did not occur. She said the couple examined bear excrement to see what berries might be safe for human consumption. She and her husband James ate berries from bushes, which surrounded the car.
Why is this a point that needs to be clarified?
Well, she told the reporter this morning the detail is humiliating to the memory of her husband. She said she was avoiding talking to reporters about what happened to her and her family, but wanted to make sure the public account was correct.
No, I don't think so. It's quite the opposite. I mean, isn't that a thing that they would tell you to do in some survival class? As gross as it sounds now, like sitting here in a studio with my coffee in front of me. I mean, you're out in the woods. You got to know what's going to kill you and what's not going to kill you. And so you
But the
look...
fact that they were looking through excrement.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying... I'm not disputing that it's not a thing you'd want to do here, like unless we were doing a morning show contest, in which case we'd have people eat as much of that as they possibly could. I'm just saying, it seems to me that if you were in the woods and you needed to know what was safe to consume, that is a off-putting but probably effective method to learn what is lethal to a mammal and what is not. That's all I'm saying.
Mammal!
And that's all I'm saying there.
Meanwhile, Klamath County Sheriff Tim Evinger said charges at the command center were having a few problems. Yes, it did make it a little bit difficult to search for James Kim, but not that much.
Obviously, the chain of command and the pyramid structure on the org chart that I spoke about
was very much on the org
clear
chart.
Some of those things up. That everybody has specific assignments, whether it's planning, logistics, operations.
The pyramid structure on the org chart.
Yes.
That's a man who knows how to package a sizzling soundbite for the media. Let's have him do all the interviews from now on.
A new controversy is brewing over plans to locate a George W. Bush Presidential Library and Policy Center at Southern Methodist University.
How big could the building possibly need to be?
I see it as an issue between the Methodist Church and those who want to use the Methodist Church and tie it forever to the Bush history legacy.
That's someone who belongs to the Methodist Church.
All right, there you go. By the way, we're going to put a pin in this, that little story right there.
This joke, copyright 2007, Rick Emerson Show.
I'm just right now calling out the whole... what book would be in the George W. Bush Presidential Library? Hello, caller. All right. Yeah, I'm not going to do that joke. I'm just saying... I'm calling it out right now so that no one else will do it. Because no one wants to hear that for an hour and a half. Here's Tim Riley.
Cell phone addiction is an increasing phenomenon.
Number three.
Oh. This kind of need to know, need to be connected, seems to be kind of a new phenomenon that's really come about since the technology has allowed it to occur.
That's Professor Lisa of the University of Florida's College of Medicine. Who says cell phones may also mask other problems like keeping people from feeling lonely?
So by being on the cell phone or sending a text message or playing Tetris or surfing the web, they can look like they're connected to someone else and don't have to feel that same sense of aloneness.
That's so sad.
But you know what I use mine for? It's very handy downtown if you're walking by yourself and trying to get somewhere. When panhandlers come up to you and see you on the phone...
Yes.
They avoid you.
No, it's like a people be gone.
Right.
No, it's like a deep woods off.
They support people on Hawthorne, too.
Totally. Yeah. It is a deep woods off for the homeless and the undesirable. You're right about that, exactly.
Even though I don't make or take more than two or three phone calls per year.
Do you, do you just hold it to your ear and pretend to be listening intently, or do you speak?
I speak.
Just walk around going, yes. No, that's no fant. Great. No, fire them all. Fire all of them.
Yeah.
And then burn them. That's fantastic. You know, and the other thing is,
it's the greatest invention. I'll gladly pay $40-something a month to keep panhandlers away from me.
Keep people away from me.
Yeah.
The other great thing about that story is how sad that, like, that there's someone there pretending to have a social life by playing Tetris on their phone, and that the coworkers are going, should we go be friends with Scotty? He looks so desperately lonely. No, I guess he's talking to somebody. No, it's okay. Let's shun him further. He doesn't need our companionship.
The professor said cell phones aren't something that are going to go away.
The more technologically advanced things get, the smaller the phones get, the fancier they get, probably the more of a problem this will become.
That's not a scientist. That's just whoever answered
the
phone.
That's a professor.
That's someone who just picked up the phone. She's there dropping off some dry cleaning or something, and she just happened to be around when they called.
And I want to a war excitement.
Affair, prison. Okay.
Yes. Cheaters beware. You could end up in prison for life if you're caught cheating on your spouse. In Michigan, there's a law in the books that makes it infidelity a criminal felony that carries a possible life sentence. The president of the American Divorce Association for Men, not to be confused with a hair club for men, Brent Boyer says it's all true.
Brent Boyer?
Brent Boyer.
Oh.
It has not been enforced, but the law is, under criminal sexual conduct statute, if you're committing a sexual act in the context of any felony, you could be charged under CSC 1, first degree, which carries a life prison sentence.
This guy's on the phone right now, like, booking his guest shot this afternoon.
Don't expect any prosecutors to enforce this law.
They haven't done it since 1971. They probably will never do it, but it does cause concern when you've got a statute that says this very clearly, and you got a law to go on hand in hand with it on the books.
That's totally one of those laws, too, that they drag out whenever a guy's just a dick and they can't find anything else to convict him on.
Always warn your clients, Mr. Lawyer, to take the fifth if asked to understand about adultery.
During divorce practice, we had always told our clients, you need to take the Fifth Amendment privilege. Don't answer questions when someone starts asking you if you've been sleeping with somebody during your marriage other than your wife. This just hits that home where it's, for one, because it could get you convicted of a crime.
And kill all the witnesses.
Portland's new area tram cars are no longer nameless. They are named Gene and Walt.
For Walt Disney and...
No.
Oh, wait,
Gene... These are some politically correct things here. Let's see here.
Gene and Walt.
Gene Richardson is the Gene. She's America's first engineering graduate of OSU. Walt honors Walt Reynolds, the first African-American to graduate from the University of Oregon Medical School, now known as Oregon Health and Science University.
Well, whatever.
Then,
that's just less interesting. That's just not worse. That's not fun.
No, this is even worse, if not stupid. They've chosen the name for the new upper and lower tram car stations. The upper station name is...
Pander.
Camifoo.
Camifoo.
Camifoo. Not to be confused with, like, Beroflu. It means on the mountain in Pig Latin or something. Oh, it's in the Tualatin language. So all you Tualatin...
The Tualatin language.
Apparently they speak a different language in Tualatin. I've never been there and spoken to anyone.
Camifoo. I don't understand. Okay, let's...
Camifoo means the mountain in Tualatin.
What mountain in Tualatin?
It means the mountain in
the Tualatin language.
What language do they speak in Tualatin?
Tualatinese.
And so... Okay, and so the...
So the lower station is named Chaminchol, which means on the river. We're not sure if that's in Tualatin either.
The station for what? For the tram?
Yeah.
The trams which are named...
Walt and Minnie.
Walt? No.
Gene and Walt.
I swear to God I was going to say Mickey and Minnie, and I knew that was wrong.
But they should be, shouldn't they?
They really should. Let's just call them Mickey and Minnie. And Packy. Here's the thing about the tram.
Packy and Wacky.
Snicky and Snacky. The thing about the tram is that...
How many people do these things fit?
You know what they should have been called? Schlemiel and Schlemazel. Come on! Come on! It's genius. I'm going to call them Schlemiel and Schlemazel from now on.
Apparently, they're in Vail today.
They've been running for... They've been there...
Tickets are sold out.
Yeah, I never noticed them. All right. Whatever. I was driving in today, though, and you know the weird thing about those trams is that...
Trammy! I heard they're not heated.
Is that... what?
I heard they're not heated.
Well, they're going to snap off and plunge to the ground. Why bother? I mean, it's only a matter of time before they destroy themselves.
I mean, some teenagers are going to jump up and down in these things.
You know the one guy.
Snap.
You know a guy is going to try to leap from one to the other, too. There's going to be some daredevil nitwit. No, the thing about...
With silly string.
The thing about those trams...
Why are they there? Why can't people drive automobiles or what?
Why can't you take the bus? That was my first question.
Right.
That was just take the bus.
Is there a big demand to take trams?
Well, it's only for government employees. Am I right? Or for OHSU people?
Oh.
Well, seriously.
Not anyone can write on
this. I don't think it's for patients unless you want to pay like $12 or some crap. Isn't that true? I mean, maybe I'm making that up.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm pretty
sure. Why can't we get something to take the coin tower? They can string something from the roof?
I demand a tram from my house to here.
How about a Zeppelin?
I demand a dirigible. That's going to be in. That's going to be when we move over to the bill. That'll be one of my final demands. I demand a Zeppelin. I demand a hydrogen-filled Zeppelin.
Zeppelin. Well, who came up with this wacky idea?
Zeppelin is a great word when it's used to actually mean a dirigible.
So I take it nobody wanted it, but they pushed it through anyway.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I was only going to make this observation, that when I was driving across the Ross Island Bridge, and let me just say this, the roads were clear this morning, so of course we were back to having traffic. I mean, people were driving, you know, because for like 2 days, people were nice and considerate. Today, it's like they were making up for lost time, cutting people off, not knowing how to merge, cutting in front of me. Anyway, I right past the tram this morning, see how we're being local and relatable, right past the tram, and you know, people get on top or whatever, they get into it. And then they sort of go like, okay, go! And they let it go. And then
how long does it take?
It sort of, it looks like it takes, I don't know, probably 5-6 minutes. But, you know, and so the tram is moored. You know, it's mounted. You get onto it. And then they cut loose the fasteners or they unfasten whatever, and it goes.
Are there any bags there in case you get air sickness?
No, I don't believe so. Well, I don't know. I can't say for sure. I hope so. I hope somebody vomits on it. But the weird thing about it is, though.
Yes.
That struck him as very funny.
It is funny. Vomit equals funny.
Those things are scary. Have you ever been on a gondola?
I was trying to see if I could do the gondola. I barely knew yet. No, I have not. Where would I have gone on a... Yes, all the time. Where would I have gone on a gondola in southeast Portland?
They have gondolas
in Vegas.
Washington.
They have in Las Vegas, too, actually. I have not.
There's this one place that went...
They don't have them at Kennewick Mountain?
What is the difference between a gondola and a boat?
You're thinking about
it. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the hangy thing.
That's a gondola.
Yeah, that's the gondola.
No.
Yes, it is.
No.
A gondola.
No. A gondola is a thing that they use down the water in Italy.
Oh, the people with the funny hats.
In Venice. That's a guy. A gondola is the boat that you travel around Venice in.
No, a gondola.
There's one that's in the water. And in the air.
One
could cause a problem if there's ever a mechanic
at the computer. Did you think I was just randomly bringing up a boat for no reason?
Why would the same name apply to a thing that's in the air as to a thing that's in the water?
If it was the one in the water, that would be a tough paddle up to the top where the hospital is on that hill, wouldn't you say?
Yes, the gondola is one of the, like a compartment.
So you know that this one has to be up in the air, because that would be a tough paddle up to the top of that hill. So it goes without saying that this gondola is
in the sky.
It is
a gondola.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so confused.
Anyway, so what I was saying like an hour ago is that they load people onto whatever it is.
It's scary.
The tram. Yeah, but okay, so it's moored. They load people onto it.
This big.
There's a hook, and then they unfasten the moorings, and it starts its long trip. But here's the thing. When they first let it go, it rocks back and forth, not side to side, but, you know, forward and backward.
Right,
and
like shot.
Like a milder version of that pirate ride that's at every carnival where the ship just goes back and forth. Whatever the what is that called? The Grim Reaper or whatever the hell it's called? The Galahad? Whatever the hell. Anyway, when they let the tram go, the car, it goes, and it rocks back and forth for a while before it settles. Very unnerving, even to watch.
A gondola lift is a type of aerial lift, often called a cable car.
You don't have to convince me, sir.
Well, these names are stupid. And nobody's going to remember them or be able to pronounce them.
That's the official position.
I'm sure they're not hyphenated names. Like, Chamafu hyphen Chamachal. In the Tualatin language.
What are we calling the trams? El Shlemiel and Shlemazel.
What happened to Pecky?
What happened to that baby?
Baby Pecky?
Yeah, baby Pecky Rose.
She's a ward of the caring state.
In the loving arms of the government.
Yeah.
All right. We've got
never
all
to be
of
seen
these,
again.
Got all of these calls. I haven't played the Cher song yet. So we haven't even talked about my sweater. Sweater? All right, it's 503-733-2970. I honestly don't know what's going on. Scott Daly will be, it's going to be a shame when my therapist fixes me and this program goes back to normal. Scott Daly coming up next hour. More from the Ministry of Truth. Your phone calls, Chelsea Handler tickets. You stay right there. Don't go anywhere.